Welcome back, fans of Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. It's Joey Gaynor.
I'm Paul McGee.
And Dan Madigan.
That's right. The three prettiest faces in wrestling. And we're back at Skid Row Studios, the coolest studio in America. And that's even the America with a K.
Exactly.
Oh.
South and North, by the way.
That's right. Exactly. North and South America.
Exactly.
And we could throw in, there's an America somewhere in Europe, Little America. We'll throw that in, too. By the way, this is our new theme song. And this was written by the very talented Mr. Julian Orzabal. We want to thank him a whole lot for that.
Yeah, I know that last name. He isn't his brother with Tears for Fears?
Well, let's let the fans decide.
Oh, okay. All right. Excellent. The music is excellent. It's excellent.
Absolutely. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, we've been gone. We've been off the air for a while, so it's good to be back with you guys.
I'll tell you what, it feels like it's been far too long.
It's too long. It's far too long.
Yeah.
I was actually able to go to Las Vegas and perform. That's how much time we've been off the air. And
you walked there, too.
Exactly. I walked to Vegas. That's what I did. Yeah. And what happens in Vegas is really horrendous. There's some terrible crap going on.
Yeah. It's, but, you know, to our fans who've been following us since we started the show, we'd like to thank where we start came from. And I think a nice shout out to the John Lovitz Comedy
Club. Comedy Network, and John Lovitz, and to Mark Short.
Mark Short helped us get where we are.
Christina Swords, our producer, who was instrumental in working hard and keeping this show alive.
Yeah, and so we want to thank them for the work from the beginning. And also, we spent a little stint at the Rick D Studio. So thank you, Rick D, for putting up with us for a while. And now we found we found our home.
We found the beautiful
home. Three orphans have now come home. The prodigalist of prodigalist sons have now come home.
Well, I tell you what a great location this is. You know, they got top-of-the-line mics and cameras, and we got great producers in the other room, so we want to give a big shout-out to them over there.
Our engineer, Jenny, and, of course, Jeremy, and the other fella who's, I think, out on bail. What's his name? Andy! And you know what was great? We this is our first show here. We slid in. Today, got here, everything was ready.
Yeah.
And I promise you, you will not hear morning zoo sounds during our show, like when we were talking about the death of a wrestler and we heard, wah, wah, choke.
And not ironically, you bring that up, that, you know, our show is based on, we talk about wrestling, we talk about movies, we talk about almost anything, but unfortunately, last month, there was a really tragic accident in Mexico, actually in Tijuana.
Mm-hmm.
With the Pero Aguayo Jr. passed away, and an awful one in a million chance tragic accident. And we just want to give our condolences to his family, his friends, his comrades, as someone that I was a big fan of his. I know, Joe, you worked with his dad.
I worked with his dad in Muscle Rock many years ago with Eddie Guerrero and Conan, who was on Lucha Underground.
And he was involved in that, too.
Yeah, he was. T.J. Perkins was there as another character, and Ray.
And it's very sad. I don't know if he ever had his son at the shows. He would have been about 10 years old at the time or so. But his dad was all of these guys that are in Lucha Libre, first of all, I will say that they are some of the greatest athletes ever. Their acrobatics, their work, the hard hits they take. And this was just a tragedy. I mean, it was
it was a fluke. I mean, to even say it's a fluke, this is a move that has been done by this wrestler, by Rey Mysterio. When I say 1,000 times, I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
Probably more than 1,000 times. This is something that happens. This is just a bizarre, tragic, unfortunate, untimely thing that happened. And the sad thing is, besides him losing his life, these families are very close.
Yeah.
I mean, Aguayos and the Mysterios, but all the Lucha families are close. I mean, Rey Mysterio and Perro Jr. were pros at 15 years old. And these guys grew up in the business. We saw them grow as wrestlers in the business.
Rey Mysterio's the original
his uncle,
Rey Mysterio, the uncle.
Mike Lopez.
Worked in Muscle Rock. I worked with him also.
Yeah.
So I was, you really feel it more than it's just some celebrity or whatever when you oh, that was one of my favorite singers or whatever. I mean, this, you really feel it.
You feel it. And we've always said that wrestling fans are a really unique breed because you follow these guys. You follow, like I said, we follow this guy's career. We follow this as a kid as he came up. He's 20 years in the business.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a long time in anything. But in a business like Lucha Libre, 20 years taking the ins and outs, the brutal the brutality does to your body. I mean, so that was just, it's very sad. We, the pop culturians, all of us, we give our, you know, our best wishes, our condolences, and our prayers going that way. So, and the one thing too, I think comes out of this is his memory. I mean, his legacy in the ring was unparalleled, but as a person, his legacy will always be, we'll cherish those memories. So,
I mean,
Pero, God rest your soul.
Vaya con Dios. Let's, God bless you and rest in peace to your family also.
Yeah, so on that, let's take it from a low to a high.
WrestleMania.
We'll talk about WrestleMania now.
Because he's been waiting to talk about
how
it.
How could you not talk about WrestleMania?
Jump into WrestleMania, though, if you don't mind, Dan, why don't you tell our viewers a little bit about who you are and what brings you to the pop culture?
We'll pull WrestleMania back the reins.
Just for a second.
I like to keep him in suspense.
Yeah, like suspended animation. Well, personally, I mean, my background is I'm a writer. Some people find that funny, but I'm a writer. I'm a screenwriter. I've done different things in the business. I've written movies. I've written books, reality shows. I've been a road manager for bands. I've worked in pro wrestling, horror movies. You know, basically everything your parents tell you not to do. That's I pursue this. But I worked for the WWE for a while. Writing and directing the show, you know, Raw and SmackDown and stuff. I worked WrestleMania 20, and I wrote their first film, See No Evil. I'm working now in the Lucha Libre world to some extent. I'll talk about that later. So, you know, much like the mafia, once you're in pro wrestling, it's very hard to get out. It's very hard to, you know, pull yourself out of that situation because, you know, you make a lot of friends, but it becomes a very addicting business. You know, we start as fans watching it. And we evolve with it. And then once you get to the other side, you know, behind the curtain, behind the ring, it's a whole different world. And then you realize it's a business. You know, you go in, you know, wide-eyed, going, wow. Then all of a sudden, you realize very quickly, you realize this is a business. And the bottom line is wrestling is there to make money. And we can talk angles all we want. We can talk storylines. But, you know, the main thing for wrestling is to put asses in seats. That's it. Eyes in front of the TV. And that's a hard thing to do. We sometimes criticize about this should have happened, that should have done this way, this promotion, so and so. But just go out there every week and to put a show on for millions of people is, trust me, that's an amazing feat. When I first went to the WWE, I'd been on movie sets before, television sets, movie sets, and I'd seen the crews work. I'd never seen a crew work as hard as the crew that Vince McMahon has. I mean, you have no idea. It's like a high-octane circus freak show at some point, just behind the scenes between the trucks they bring in, the crews to put up. I mean, all the guys that work there, from the stage managers to the lighting guys, to the camera crews, to the pyro guys, to the creative team that doesn't get enough credit sometimes, so sometimes the heads on the chopping block, to the road agents. It really is an amazing thing. And I saw things that Hollywood units couldn't pull off. They couldn't do it. I mean, we would write stuff sometimes. We would write the shows, the storylines, and they're constantly, what I mean, constantly being changed. And sometimes there were times when right before the show went on, we would change. And the wrestlers, I mean, think about it. They have to know their match in the head, their finishes, the moves, and then their promos. Sometimes that could be half a page, 3 pages. Sometimes you're doing 3 segments. So all this is on their head going in. You don't realize, you know, these guys are amazing, not just athletes, but as entertainers, performers, they're bringing the whole package to it. And once they step into, you know, past that curtain, anything can happen, you know. So it was very addicting. When you're in the headphones and they say, Dan, we're going to live in 10 seconds, you're like, it's a baptism of fire. So I was burned a few times, but then you come out the other side a little tougher.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Paul, why don't you share, you know, with the audience,
Talk about yourself.
Listen, I'm a listening caller.
All right, well, just to introduce myself out there to the world, the way I found these pop culturians is, you know, I've been a wrestling fan my whole life, grew up throughout the 80s, loved all those guys in that time, and I found myself having about maybe 5 or 6 years where I, I just said, ah, oh, that's kid stuff. And I started learning the art of improv, and I started really getting into theater acting and stuff like that. And started watching wrestling again right at the time that the Monday Night Wars are taking off and the NWO comes in and DX and all the greats there that we saw this last week at WrestleMania. Yeah. And, you know, I just realized that what they do reminds me, and not to be too geeky for everybody, but as an improv guy, like, I love the old pageant wagons of the Italian Renaissance. You know, they're going from town to town, and they've got these stock characters, and some of them have masks, and they have these roles that they play, and they've got the physical comedy, as they'd call it, and you know, there's a lot of theatrics and things like that. And I started watching Vince McMahon take his pageant wagon, you know, from town to town, and these characters, and it just it made so much sense to me. You know, I was writing theses and papers and stuff on it, and it sounds really lame, but in college as a theater geek, you know, this was kind of my connection to the pro wrestling world. And then I got out and I started meeting different pro wrestlers, and I got to familiarize myself with them, and not from a performer standpoint, but as a person. And you know, it just, like you said, it got addicting. And I found myself over the years, you know, anything I could grab my hands on that would lead me to get more information or more insight as to what's going on behind the curtain, or you know, writing stuff. Back in the day, I was doing a fantasy wrestling back when you use HTML and you'd do the deed on there. And man, it just, it's a lifestyle. That whole art and the whole way that they do everything, it just, it's amazing.
Yeah, as a kid, I mean, we all read comic books as a kid. We all saw certain movies. And wrestling, to some extent, is it's a culmination of all those things. It's the comic book come to life. It's that bizarre Santo film. It's that crazy cartoon. It's everything we saw as a kid, but now it's tangible. It's right there. Because the great thing about wrestling, whether it's, you know, Lucha Libre, American wrestling, Japanese strong style wrestling, is it really pushes the boundaries of our imaginations. You know, all storytelling is based upon, even goes pre-Bible, good guy, bad guy.
Right.
It all goes that way. And this is, and you said, this is the passion play brought out. And no matter what happens, it culminates in the ring. You know, so that's the great thing is, you know, you could build a story around it, but everything, the story goes and goes and goes. And finally, it pinnacles inside that ring. And that's the great thing about it. Because once you, for the most part, once the two guys leave the ring, most of the issues are resolved. If not, then we have something else going on.
Then you have another pay-per-view.
Another pay-per-view.
Next month.
And then, and brings us to the third leg of this table, Mr. Joey Gaynor.
Well, I'm an actor and a writer, comedian, stand-up comedian. I just got back from Vegas. Actually, I just did. I was at the Tropicana at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, you had a good stint there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was great. I want to send a shout-out to Jamie Masada, Harry Basil. Thank you for having me in. I was with Tim Gaither, John Campanaro, two of the funniest guys on the road. And it was really great. It was a pleasure to be there, hopefully going back soon. Maybe some other places, too. But I've been watching wrestling. I think the first TV wrestling I ever saw was with my dad. And they were little people, as we call them now, not the M word. Mm. And I watched it. And then I saw Johnny Valentine when I was a kid. Yeah. I was maybe 4.5 years old. And I saw this guy come out with this jacket with a big heart on it. And I was like, wow, look at this guy. This guy is a superhero. This guy is amazing. The atomic elbow, the whole nine yards. So I start watching it late at night when you were a kid, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night is late. And I remember one night I'm watching wrestling on the TV set that was on the kitchen table. And I think it was Gene Konitsky.
Big Mean Gene.
Big Mean Gene came in and he said, I want to tell Mr. Valentine's wife and his family to get prepared, get the will ready, because when I'm done with him at Madison Square Garden Monday night, there's going to be a pile of blood and bones in the middle of the ring. And I'm like 4.5 years old, and I pick up the phone to call the cops because this guy's going to kill Johnny Valentine. And you talk about a mark.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So I dial the zero, and I get the police and the desk sergeant, whoever it was, and I go, hey, you know, you got to have the cops at the Garden, Madison Square Garden, Monday night, because Gene Konitsky just said he's going to kill Johnny Valentine. And the desk sergeant goes, Konitsky, Valentine? son, are you watching wrestling? I said, yeah. Oh, well, don't worry. We'll have the whole force there, and you go to bed now. Oh, okay. And as I'm hanging up, my old man comes walking. He goes, what are you doing on the phone? I said, I call the cops because Johnny, forget the goddamn bed. You know, so that was the start. But then I was a, been a wrestling fan my whole life. I took a sabbatical for a little while.
Yeah, like
I didn't watch
it,
like we all do. But when I was about 14, 15 years old, I was in the Kinney Building in Newark, New Jersey, where I'm from. And my mom had to go in there for something. And I noticed on the marquee downstairs of all the offices, WWWF.
Wow, it's going back.
Willie Gilsenberg, president of the WWW, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. And I got in the elevator, went right up. I found the office. I knocked on the door. Nobody there. Got back on the bus the next day from Roselle to Newark. Go up, knock on the door. Door opens up. There's Willie Gilsenberg, 1,000 years old. And I said, well, you know, there was a big match at Shea Stadium on Saturday night. I couldn't go. My mom, Pedro Morales, Bruno Sammartino. Ah, come on. And he tells me the whole match, how everything went, the crowd, everything. And then he looks at me and he goes, what are you here for? I said, well, I'm looking for a job. And he says, go downstairs, get me a cup of coffee. Tell him I only want that much coffee. Okay. So he gives me the money. I go downstairs. I get the coffee. I come back up. And he takes the coffee cup. He goes under. And I hear something rattling. And I hear pouring. And he brings the cup back up. He goes, all right, that's here's $2. Come back another time. He has a drink. All right, well, thank you, Mr. Gilsenberg. So I thought I had a job. So I'd show up there twice a week, three times a week. But what he did was, whenever wrestling came to the Newark Armory or the Elizabeth Armory, he'd be in the box office, and whenever I'd show up with my mom or my friends, he'd go, here, sit over here. And he'd give me seats that were amazing. And so hats off to Willie Gilsenberg. And then when I moved to California, when I was right out of high school, I became an actor and a writer and that, and I got involved in wrestling indirectly in around 1987. In 1984, I found out indirectly that me and Adrian Adonis, Heath Frank,
one of my favorites, one of the all-time greats.
Is he in the Hall of Fame? Is he in the WWE?
He should be.
If he's not, I'm going to lobby for it.
What a great performer!
He was a tremendous performer, and unfortunately, he lost his life in a tragic auto accident in 1988. But I was friends with a couple of local wrestlers, and they were looking for for this show called Muscle Rock. They were looking for an announcer, a traffic cop, a guy that could call the matches, do the interviews. And I was watching wrestling like 80 hours a day. And so I knew all the holes, Insigiri, Japanese headlock, this thing, that thing. I got a chance to do it. And my first interview was going to be with Dr. D. David Schultz, who smacked down Stossel around.
Wow, that's a...
Yeah, so I call Keith.
Folks, look on YouTube on that one. Yeah. Please, look that up.
I call Keith up and I go, Keith, I'm going to do this show. And he goes, yeah, I know about that, Mondo. Because Mondo Guerrero was working as the head guy in the
From
dressing.
The Guerrero family, yeah.
Right. Yeah, Chavo's and Hector's brother, Eddie's late brother. Yeah. And he said, well, don't worry about it. I'll call him. And he calls me back. He goes, look, just go in there, be respectful. They know you're a comedian. Just go in there, be respectful, mind your business, you'll be fine. He says, and Dr. D said, don't worry about it, it's going to go great. So I went up to Dr. D that day for the show, and I said, how do you want to do the interview? And he said, well, I'll just grab the, ask me a couple questions, then I'll just grab the mic, go nuts, and you can, and I said, okay, I'll run away. And it went that way, and it was great. And I got into that with Johnny Legend and stuff, and then Incredibly Strange Rock and Roll Wrestling.
Johnny's thing with Eric Caden.
For those of you L. Ron Farrakhan fans out there, you can certainly email me at our email address right there, and I'd be happy to email you back because I am L. Ron Farrakhan.
You are?
The back. Oh, yeah.
I thought you had...
Nobody ever thought. Yeah. But anyway, I was Fabulous Ray, L. Ron Farrakhan, Main Street Maxi Green, and Senior Albondigas. Those are all the different characters. But, we did the shows for a while.
Part of the Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
Yeah. Where did you come up with that last one?
Senior Albondigas? That's when I was manager of the Aztec Mummy.
Johnny Legend has the real the Aztec Mummy is from a film made Aztec Mummy.
Yeah, the Aztec Mummy meets El Santo.
Which one is it? I have all these movies, Mike. They just sort of blend into one big, you know, Mexican loop in my head after a while, you know, watching these. But yeah, Johnny brought that to the when we were doing the Jerry Lawler, Andy Kaufman tribute.
That's another reason now I was involved with wrestling. Yeah. And Andy and I were really close.
Yeah, you knew Andy Kaufman very well.
Yeah, yeah. And he would do wrestle women at the Comedy Store. And my friend Harris Pete and I would act like ring attendants, referee, in charge, make announcements about it. And it was great because Andy would, I mean, if you talk about heat, Jesus Christ, bottles were flying past my
Andy
head.
Andy Kaufman really understood what wrestling was about. Not just, you know, he understood that it was performance art. He understood, he knew how to push the button. And when people look at this business and they don't get it, I see Andy understood it's the manipulation of emotions.
Yeah.
He went in there. He was a natural heat seeker. I mean, there are some guys in the business working 20, 30 years that couldn't do what Andy did. And I think he had a lot of fun doing it. He realized this is it.
He told me, referee tonight, whatever, don't break character. So, of course not, I didn't break character. And I did, of course, I get hit in the head. I don't see what's going on. So then I wake up and I'm counting out the girl that he's pinning after, and the place with the Comedy Store at that time, the main room was jammed. You couldn't even move in there on these Monday nights when he would show up. It was already, people were coming to see Robin Williams, Comedy Store Players, all of this.
Oh, wow.
And I was part of that. And then to become part of Andy's thing, refereeing and whatever. And then afterwards, people would want to go in the little dressing room we had to side just for him. And we'd stand out front going, no one goes in there except close personal friends and family. Leave the wrestlers alone. We would go through that. And then would not break character the rest of the day.
Which is really great about your career, Joey, is that two passions you've had, comedy and wrestling.
You've been extremely lucky,
not just to be on the street, but really deep, deep inside with wrestling. And with the community, you were friends with Robin Williams, Andy Kaufman,
And to be able to go into the, that's the what do you want to call it, the DMZ or the, going in the dressing room, going backstage at the shows, of meeting all the wrestlers, and being in the area that fans would kill to be in, where you see things you're not supposed to see. They're not bad things, it's just that,
it's the illusion.
It's the illusion, right. You want to bust the illusion.
Like comedians, wrestlers, they're like magicians. There's a certain line, and we're at the point now where everyone knows even the word kayfabe, but we still want to believe that there's, it's like you said, the suspension of disbelief.
This is,
you were very lucky. I mean, if you look back at your career, you've done TV series and movies and stuff, and you've worked with some of the best comedians. So it's really, we're very lucky as a team to have Joey here, because the two things he's really passionate, obsessed about, wrestling and comedy, his roots run deep in this. So I think
it does. I watched WrestleMania in my hotel room Sunday night.
Yeah, you were on the road.
I was sitting in there, and $9.99, greatest $10 you'll ever spend a month, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean that.
He's shilling for them now.
I'm shilling.
They should sponsor us.
I sat in the hotel room, and the phone rang. Comic calls me up, friend of mine there. Okay, we go to lunch. No, I'm watching WrestleMania. Click. And I had all my stuff that I was going to eat and watch, and I had nothing but a blast watching it. And being stuck where I was working in a hotel, without the WWE Network, I wouldn't have been able to see it. I would have had to get a pay-per-view. And if you order a pay-per-view,
that's a lot of money.
It's like $70, and it's only good for 24 or 48 hours, and then it's gone.
Yeah. I worked WrestleMania 20, and that was like an endurance test. It's funny because when you're behind the scenes sometimes, you plan the shows out, you direct the segments, you produce the segments, you're figuring out. Sometimes you don't get to see it happen sometimes. You forget, you're sort of like, oh, did that just happen? You're backstage filming something else, so you sort of, in a way, miss out. You enjoy the show a lot of times after the fact. After the fact, you're enjoying the show. Sometimes it's hard when you're behind the scenes to really enjoy it because you're too busy thinking about the next segment.
Well, the guys back there, now there might be monitors, but most of the time they can't see what's going on. They're not allowed to come out and stand there and watch, really.
We have monitors now.
In the old days, you would, I'd go to the Forum with Keith. We'd have a WWE show at the Forum. And I'd go backstage with him, and you'd see Albano and all these guys looking through a crack in the curtain. Mm. What's going on out there? What is he doing? Oh, did he do that? Did he do the move? Now they can see it, but I remember how they didn't see stuff. And you would ask another wrestler, and he goes, I didn't see it. Which they weren't kidding.
And what's amazing now is literally in real time, this stuff will go online.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this stuff actually goes online from, like, I mean, any event, a wrestling event. I mean, it's as you're doing it, someone's actually recording it.
Yeah. You tune into the network.
It's right there, which is exactly. Amazing. So, you know, I think, you know, what we bring to the show, we all have three different distinct personalities. Yeah. From
Dan,
different backgrounds.
What you bring to the show is great because you've been in the big show as or the rock show. Mm-hmm. That's how what Randy used to call it. And Paul, as a fan and an analyst of this stuff, brings a whole other side of it. Plus, you're the baby face here because we look like we want to kill
somebody. We're definitely heal.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. We're so happy to be back. We love our fans. And give us a call. It's at 800-893-9562. I got to memorize that number. But you should know it already because this is Skid Row, the greatest studio in the world as far as I'm concerned.
And make sure, don't click around.
Stick around.
That's right.
And we are back.
We're back.
They missed this already, I can tell. And so now we're going to talk about, so we're all chomping at the bits.
Oh, yeah.
WrestleMania 31. And it's kind of appropriate that our first show is literally the week after.
Yeah.
So everything's still fresh in our minds and memories.
Yeah. It's just this past Sunday.
Yeah.
And the first thing I want to do is a shout out to, of course, my now favorite heel, and that's Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins.
Hello, Seth.
Thanks for following us, Seth, and also
Slithering Seth Rollins.
Man, when you came out that cashed the check, everybody's laying down. I said, "This is the guy."
That was a great swerve. I mean, I gotta say, in working in the business and being a fan, I'm watching the Lesnar Reigns go back and forth, thinking, "Okay, there's no." I mean, and it worked out well because Lesnar lost; he wasn't pinned, didn't look, and now you can build a program off Reigns and Rollins. It was a great he was great. Rollins was fantastic,
and he got busted open. I've never seen Lesnar bleed, and I know from what I've heard he does not like getting hit in the face.
He looked
anyway
rough the next night,
which is
staples,
you know,
in
what?
The head.
That's great. Ooh. Because you know what? Now he's pissed, and now you get the beast is wounded. The beast is injured.
Oh yeah,
and he's dangerous.
Well, yeah, I gotta tell you, that's nice, Dan. Unless your name is Michael Cole, because I gotta tell you, we want to send our sympathy out
to Michael Cole.
A speedy recovery to my friend Michael Cole.
C7 vertebrae, apparently diagnosed with the bulging disc. Lots going on.
Michael Cole's a warrior, and he will be back. I can guarantee you that.
Also, watching Booker T and JB lay there silent was interesting.
For them being quiet any amount of time is actually is amazing. But
that table flip, man, it looked real. I had to watch it a couple times.
I really like that every time he threw Reigns around, Reigns would look up and smile like, what else you got? I liked that. I really did because that showed that he's got balls, he's got heart. The way this went, I thought, was really well done.
Yeah, it was.
And much better than that.
I have to say, for Rollins and Reigns, guys who haven't been in the business in the big leagues that long, these guys are very polished. They're very good at what they do. I'm impressed with both of them.
Yeah.
And just being in the business, not just wrestling, but being able to cut a promo, to say it, not go follow your lines, to get it out, that is an art form. That's a skill. And these guys have really done it well. And Rollins is the classic slimy heel, and he's fantastic. Reigns has a very smoldering fire to him and stuff. We still haven't seen him ignited yet, I don't think. But it's really that the fact that these guys have history now, they're going to have a future together. And it's smart. Now, Lesnar's going to be this entity lurking in the sidelines, fuming, getting madder and madder. And Paul Heyman is always enjoyable to watch. Paul's always fun to watch. I've always said he's one of my favorites.
I was wondering how much of that at one point, because he hit Lesnar a couple of times with the Superman punch and he caught him. And I'm saying to myself, wow, most guys' skin don't break. And then he broke the skin. And I said to myself, how much of that turned shoot? Because when Lesnar went, suplex city, bitch, I sat back and I went, wow, I am glad I'm not Reigns at this moment.
There have been times, I don't know if I should mention any names, but when I was working there was a time when we were trying to get one guy over, and Kurt Angle said, just keep hitting me till I bleed. And he said, he's just old school. Just keep hitting me till I bleed. And we were in Pittsburgh. And I think it was Pittsburgh, And Kurt is one tough cat. And, you know, when you want to make it look realistic, it's got to be realistic.
It's got to be
realistic.
Absolutely. There was a WrestleMania, and I'm not sure the number, where Jake the Snake took on the Honky Tonk Man.
This
was before I had barely knew Keith at the time because we had just
connected.
It might have been, it was a.
Maybe six or seven, maybe. Was it WrestleMania 6 or 7?
Something like that. Yeah. And I said to him, I called him up and I went, wow, man, Jake the Snake looked good. He goes, and he says to me, yeah, he hit him about 35 times, didn't he? I go, yeah, he kept punching him. He goes, yeah, Honky Tonk didn't fall down, did he? I said, yeah, how come? He goes, he didn't want to. And I went, really? He goes, yeah. He says, see, it's not always what you think. Hmm. So then I got him to open up a little. And he said, Jake has pissed a lot of people off. And this was his turn to get pissed off. And the Honky Tonk Man, I believe, won the match legitimately. He hit, what's his name, the Honky Tonk? I can't think of his name. Wayne Ferris.
Yeah, Wayne Ferris.
He hit him.
Who's Lawler's cousin.
Yeah, hit him with shots to the face. I mean, he just kept hitting him, and he would just turn around and stand there like a big, strong Elvis. He'd go down.
Honky Tonk, one of my all-time favorites.
That's a tough guy.
Boy, he was a great entertainer. I mean, the Honky Tonk Man, that song, him coming out. I mean, he took a gimmick that should have been a flash-in-the-pan gimmick, should have been over within 2 weeks, And he's made a long career out of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
absolutely. Because the thing about honky is he doesn't just play it, he lives it. And I think he's always been, he's outspoken, he's outrageous, but he's original.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's not an Elvis impersonator, he's the honky talk man. So, I mean, if you, some of our newer fans, listeners, go back, YouTube it, and watch honky work. This guy's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, his in-ring skill was
fantastic.
Excellent.
And I used to go to wrestling, and he'd be getting... I'd be booing him, and I'd stand up and go, "Why are you booing him? He's just a honky-tonk, man. Oh, sit down. I hate that guy."
Yeah, well,
I would just perpetuate.
As we've always said, then he's doing his job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
once they hate you, you're doing your job. And team, Seth Rollins will be hated now for a long time.
Oh, it's great.
For a long time. But that's, and he's doing it great. He loves what he's doing.
And he's doing it great by getting out of the ring, too.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
The way he ran up the ramp, and then on Raw, the way he ran through the crowd let everybody
just the way he just you think the match is going to, and you know the match isn't going to happen. You know we're pulling back. We're going to save this. And Lesnar's like a bull ready to come out. And he's like a matador holding, instead of the red cape, he's holding that belt. And he's walking to the ring, goes to the ropes. He goes, "You know," and that was just way to just hit the hornet's nest. Hit the hornet's nest.
Yep. He's the Matthew McConaughey of wrestling. Yeah. If you watch his face and looking, he's got that whole Matthew McConaughey thing.
But he's very natural at it. Seth is very natural, and it's funny. A lot of times when the Shield came out, you had three distinct people, much like this team here. But when they broke up, everyone went on the way. A lot of times we've seen different fractions come together. They break up, one falls by the wayside, you know, and sometimes they all just sort of go away. But everyone's sort of taken a direction, a strong direction, from Dean Ambrose to Roman Reigns to Seth Rollins. So when that team was put together, they did a really great job of finding three distinct personalities, because these guys, they stood as a unit, now they stand as individuals. So it's really given the WWE now a lot of storylines to work with, and you have really credible guys in those lines.
And you mentioned the Shield. It's amazing that Rollins and Reigns, two of those members, were both in that main event. In fact, a lot of searching online, you'll find that as he's pinning him, he actually says, as Rollins pinning Reigns, you hear him say, "Thank you so much."
Wow.
Kayfabe.
Wow. Well, you know, there's some other great things that happened. The Big Show won the Battle Royal, and Damian Sandow. I really, really, really hope this guy finally gets to do it. He's been the clown. He's been the character.
He's breakout. He really is. This is his time.
This guy is an awesome. He comes from a wrestling family. He's an awesome performer. And I was very excited that John Cena beat Rusev clean, no baloney. Mm. Beat him. Got the belt back.
That was a fun, good, hard match.
That was a great rivalry and stuff.
I'll tell you what, though.
And now Rusev's the new Koloff.
Yeah.
That John Cena, though, he's amazing to me. He's like the anti-villain. He's going out. He's a good guy. He's doing everything right. But
he is a good guy in real life. Yeah, I know.
Booed out of the building.
And I find it amazing. I think now it's the thing to boo John Cena. But when I knew John, John's a guy that when he was doing his film, The Marine, they filmed that with See No Evil, the film I did, they did that in Australia. So John would, he would do house shows, he would do Raw, whatever he was, inspect. Then he would fly to Australia, do a couple of days work, fly back, and do, I mean, this guy literally carried the company and the film production company on his shoulders. And to do what he does, you have no idea what this guy did. And he comes out fresh doing it, injured. You know, this guy does not get the recognition he deserves, even now.
No, he is, I would say with his character, he's like Bob Backlund before he went.
Yeah.
We used to call him L. Ron Fact.
But much more person, much more life. I mean, it really is.
Bob Farrakhan.
I think Cena, and Cena's connected with a lot of people. I mean, he's the number one requested guy to, you know, make a wish. I mean, that itself is an accomplishment. And I spent some nights on the road with John. We worked together, and the guy really gives it his all in the ring. You can see that once again, he does the best he can wrestling wise. He's getting better and better. His mic skills are amazing. I mean, and a lot of the stuff John does is off the top of his head. I've seen him do it improv. There were some times we had issues. I had a time to fill. John filled it by cutting a promo, informing stuff. And so, you know, he really is one of the linchpins. And right now, he has that title, and John's the type of guy that, you know, he'll step out of the spotlight for a while. He knows he's a team player. He could step one or two steps back and not worry about his position in the company or the roster, because he's always going to be there. Well, other people, they won't take a step back. Even if you push them, they won't take a step back.
I want to see a match between Rusev and Lesnar. That would be great. That would be great.
That would be really interesting to put together. And then think of the dynamic outside it. The two managers you have.
Yeah.
You know, and so you've got these two little, these personalities, but, you know, that'd be fantastic. That's like, you know, War of the Gargantuans.
Well, it's got to happen.
Yeah, eventually it's going to come together.
It's definitely got to happen because it will be huge. And who would be the face? Would Rusev turn?
Well, it's funny that you say that, Joey, because I don't see Lesnar as a heel. And he's just a badass.
That's what I'm getting the picture.
He really is like a Steve Austin. If you think about it, it's the continuation of that Steve Austin. This is who I am. I am the beast. You're in my way. My agenda is this. I'm going to destroy you. And much like if you look at the Road Warrior, like the Humongous.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm just providing for my group here. You happen to be in our way.
Right.
And the thing about every great villain, every great heel in his mind justifies everything. This is my title. I'm the one that broke the streak. I'm the guy that was the NCAA champion. I'm the MMA guy. I'm the real deal. I was robbed from me. I was wronged and robbed, and I'll be damned. When I get Seth Rollins again, I'm going to pull him limb from limb. He's much like a sadistic kid getting a fly. You know?
I bet you'll see that at SummerSlam would be my
It'd be great. Guess. But the guy I've always been impressed with, and I was really impressed with his opening, was Bray Wyatt. If you have a chance, go online. He came down with his Cajun Bayou gimmick, holding the lantern, and he walked by those scarecrows, and the scarecrows came to life. That I thought was inventive, original. That was fantastic.
Every time I watch that, I think of the guy in the Appalachians who, whatever he thinks, he believes. And I love the one thing he said in one of the promos was, what do you give a man who's got nothing? You give him a reason. And I said, that's exactly how revolutions start. People have nothing. Here comes a guy giving him a reason. Yeah, well, not even food, just a reason.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's like reading. He, to me, is like a character in a Cormac McCarthy novel.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, Out of Dark or, you know, some of his earliest stuff. I mean, this is a guy that's come out of the backwoods of the Appalachians, and he really resonates with something. I think it's great. And it's original. He doesn't look like everyone else. He doesn't sound like everyone else. It's great. It's different.
I'll tell you, when he was cutting a promo and he started speaking about being there from the beginning, and he starts speaking Latin, for God's sake, unreal.
Yeah,
Nobody does that.
It's like a guy.
He was an altar boy. Yeah. Probably he's Rotundo.
Character is like a Tencho revival. He's like these Southern Baptist crazed snake handlers. I mean, the religious fervor. And that's what's great about that character really brings it to the table.
What was so funny was, and I have to email him, I'm doing my show, I think it was Wednesday night, and I said, anybody here from a different city? And there was a lady in the front. I said, where are you from? She said, Blowing Rock, North Carolina. And I looked at the audience and I went, do I have to say anything else? It sounds like a hooker got with Dwayne Johnson. A place explodes. The gentleman sitting in front of her stands up and goes, what do you want me to do? I'm the mayor of Blowing Rock, North Carolina. A real guy. Because I mentioned something about Appalachians. He said, we are in the Appalachians. I went, oh, do you know Bray Wyatt? And amazingly, when I said, anybody going to watch WrestleMania, it got quiet. When I said Bray Wyatt, like half of the people went, oh, yeah, Bray Wyatt. And I'm like saying to myself, you can come out of the wrestling closet and say you're a fan, you know. And it was so funny because it's like that show that was with Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, True Detective, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. True Detective. My God, it's like he walked right off that show into the ring.
Which is great that they pushed. I mean, we've seen every permutation of character in wrestling. God knows I've written destroyed enough of them. But the fact that you're doing something that's regional. I mean, this is something that would have existed back in the days, like, you know, when the territories were there.
Ernest Angel.
Yeah.
If you remember the guy, Ernest Angel, who did a takeoff on Ernest Angley, and he would sit there and he would literally get money in the mail from people, and he would say, this ministry I'm doing in wrestling is to, and he was actually a Satanist, it come out to be, but women, old women, People were sending him money. He was getting checks in the mail, envelopes with cash, and they would donate all the money.
Is there a greater pulpit than the wrestling ring?
Oh, it's the greatest.
I mean, if you really think about it, preachers and wrestling and promoters, I mean,
and
they really
tried it so many times, and really the two best guys have been Bray Wyatt and Ernest Angel, but Bray Wyatt is, I mean, the Fireflies, all of that. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And what a pulpit on a vodcast, though. And if you like this vodcast, why don't you go to our Twitter site, which is WWPopCulturians. Make sure to leave us some comment. Go to our Facebook page, Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. Make sure that if you are going to send that dollar, that goes to my home address. I'll make sure to write you back with that.
And fans, let me tell you, if your soul is empty, send $5. All right, that's enough of that. We're going to be in jail here. 800-893-9562 if you want to call in. And our email address is right there on the screen. And that's that's Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. I believe it's at Gmail. Am I right? I can't see the screen.
That sounds about right to me.
Is that right? That is correct.
Our producer tells us that.
Wrestling with the Pop Culture. That's our engineer.
Our engineer.
Our producer is in Orange County right now, and she'll call me later. And
what I what the one thing
what we did wrong.
The one match, the one that we could talk about, the one match that confounded and confused me was they built up the Sting coming to WrestleMania, coming to the WWE, and of course. There was no one else in the roster he could go with. There's nobody else. No one else needed the rub. No one else can get over.
Got to go with the boss.
Got to go with Triple. And then that match, the way you have a guy's career, and I know he's the last holdout at WCW, and you know they won the Monday Night Wars, but here's a guy who has a mystique. He's got a personality. He's got a legend. And to sort of end in a really anticlimactic way like that, I didn't know.
Is that his last match?
I have no idea, but I just thought a guy gets hit with a...
I don't think it will be, but I got to tell you, and you were just about to hit the hammer to the head.
Yeah.
And you don't shake a man's hand who cheats to win the match with a sledgehammer. Yeah, that was what got me.
That didn't make any sense at all. That was just sort of...
Well, it was a no disqualification. Sting had the bat. Yeah. He could have used the bat. It was a... For two guys in their 50s, it was a... Pretty good.
It was rough. A good, and but then
well, it was fun. You watch the DX come out.
You get the cheap nostalgia.
Sound like my grandma, the DX.
Yeah. But I don't think that Triple H. I think ego. Now, if Triple H would have if he'd have got pinned, okay. To me, that would have been a completely different. But I think in the minds of the powers that be, well, we're going to give him Cena. And we're going
to... Well, not getting pinned, but getting beaten. I mean, think of it. I mean, you've taken years to bring this guy, this entity, this character to your promotion. This guy should be... This is why we brought him here. This is the reason.
To work together, for Christ's sake.
This is the guy. I mean, for Triple H to go out, I mean, if he had obviously done the honors, but if Sting had gone over, I mean, think of the pop he would have... And this is why he held up for so many years, all right? It's like, this is 15 years. The guy comes in. We've tried everything. The fans want to see it. And not to go over. And you could have built from there. Because, Triple H, at this point, a loss in WrestleMania isn't going to affect his legacy whatsoever.
Well, I got to kind of disagree with you, Dan, only on the fact that, man, just turned 56. I mean, there's enough reasons why you would think that if this is real, as we all know it is, that Triple H should not lose this match. And I don't think one match is going to destroy, you know, 30 years of Sting building a career. But it was disappointing, and there was, you know, a lot of air let out.
Yeah, there
when
was.
When people are just like, what?
Everyone got this shot. I mean, Shawn Michaels comes in, and when Nash and Hogan and Scott Hall came down, that I thought The Walking Dead had started too early. You know, I thought that was, and you know, everyone get their pop. You know, yeah, it still comes down to the two guys in the ring and Sting. And I think and Sting is such a guy that everyone knows. I mean, I just thought from the beginning, you know, maybe there could be someone else you could have put with him. Imagine him and Taker. Imagine him and Bray Wyatt. I mean, someone that, you know, on the same type of, not, you know, off-kilter peer.
Well, I also got to say, if this was the WWE against the WCW, and that's how that match came out.
Yeah, exactly.
The NWO. I get it, the whole Monday Night Wars. Yeah. But I wanted to see Booker come out, maybe a Goldberg appearance. Yeah. Like, you know, bring out some Dallas of those Page. Guys.
DDP.
He was at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing you got to remember is even mob bosses who hate each other and have rival trying to take over territory, even they shake hands. Hmm. So that handshake, when he put his hand out, Sting didn't just jump on the handshake. It was a very reluctant, slow handshake. And I think if you look at it, as Sting said, you got me this time. I'll be back.
It was when Corleone and Tattaglia, Bill Tattaglia came together.
Yeah.
And so, I swear on the souls of my grandchildren.
It's the bolt of lightning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that you will see Sting again. And when we do see him again, he's going to do something to the authority that rocks the authority. I think, you know, I'm not in the inner workings here, but as a wrestling fan, I would love to see him come out of nowhere and suddenly he's back. He did this. I mean, look, Randy Orton.
Maybe the rafters?
Yeah, maybe. Look, Randy Orton is back and he's made friends with the Reigns and he could turn on them at any moment and you expect it. But there's something going on. And I mean, let's face it, you know, when Randy Orton was a kid, I mean,
He's another third generation.
Yeah, I mean,
that was his RKO. I've never seen it. That was an amazing.
And
that
I gotta
was
tell
the
you,
greatest. Midair RKO. Yeah. Just my God, that was amazing. Just
Joey, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but after this Seth Rollins RKO match, Rollins goes to the back. He thinks he's done for the night. Then in the Rock, Ronda Rousey bit 45 seconds before. They take Seth in there, tell him he's going to win the title.
Wow.
Guy thought he was done for the night.
See, that's great. See, that's smart booking because when he comes out, he's pumped. This is live. This really is as live as you can get. He's not phoning it in. This is what you strive for in this business, and he's going to win the title. He's going to be hated. It was fantastic. It really was a
great
swerve.
When he came running out, and as much as in my suspension of disbelief when I watch it, and as much as Rollins, get him, when I'm the fan and I'm watching it so I can really enjoy it, not try to sit around like guys who analyze everything and call their friend, see that sucked. Mm-hmm. I like to watch it.
I like to watch it, yeah.
When he come barreling out of there, I stood up and went, yes, this is the swerve of the century.
Yeah, it really was a great swerve.
Gotta be a heartbreaker, though, for Roman Reigns to find out right before the match that you've been projected to kind of win throughout the last 3-4 months.
But the thing is, it's not about Roman Reigns' feeling. It's about building a storyline that the fans are going to follow. Because if you think about it, Roman Reigns is in a good position. It was all great storytelling. You follow the hero's journey, quote Joseph Campbell. So at this point now, Roman Reigns is the hero. Brock Lesnar has now stepped aside, and now it's Roman Reigns' journey. So there'll be a lot of focus on that. It's more important for the journey than the destination.
And Sheamus came back, and he is not a nice guy
anymore. Came back Monday night.
I like the fact he's not a nice guy.
Follically impaired, everything. I like the way he looked at stuff. You know?
And the audience was yelling something about his hair. You look stupid. And he just went, okay.
I did like
that was great.
Seeing the Lucha Dragons Monday night. I did like seeing those guys. And it's funny, and a nod to my buddy Ultimo Dragon, you know, and that moonsault that Rollins did, that was, a tribute to Ultimo. But the Lucha Dragons.
They look great.
Amazing.
They look absolutely
really
amazing.
You see the Lucha style. You see the difference. The Lucha style is so different. It's so, instead of the ground and pound, I mean, these guys are really amazing. When you watch Lucha matches, you're going to see this all the time. And speaking of Lucha matches, a quick plug here.
Plug it up.
April 11th.
April 11th.
I'm putting a show on, La Bulla, with my partner, Antonio Pelayo, who will be in our guest next week, and Steve Guerrero. We're putting on a show in Plaza de la Raza on Mission Street in Los Angeles, and it's going to be an art show, a concert, and a wrestling event. So I have got 12 wrestlers coming up. I've got 150 artists. I have 4 bands, 4 DJs. La Resistance is going to play for us. We have Jimedo Tequila sponsoring us, Tito's Vodka, Stella Rosa, Harry. It's going to be a great show. I'm going to put the link here, but it's called La Bulla. It's a great time. Oh, I just happen to have a bunch of these postcards.
Do you happen to have something we can show the fans
at home, you know, and all the ladies and gentlemen at sea, La Bulla. And we'll be putting that up. But Antonio Pelayo will be our guest next week. And if you guys are Lucha Libre fans, you guys are wrestling fans, music fans, this is what we've always talked about. Wrestling fans, horror movie fans. It's all about passion. Passion unites us, and that's why we're here doing this. We have a nice little tribute to Pero Aguayo Jr. there as well. And if you like the painting and photography, Lucha Libre theme, this is gonna be it. So,
and come check it out. And if you want to see that link, you can find it on our Facebook, on our Twitter. Again, that's at WWPopCulturians. And fellas, we're out of time
here
for this
week. We're out of time. You know what? We still got more to talk about. We'll catch it up next week. I want to say thank you, Skid Row Studios. We found a new home here. We are so comfortable. I'm going to order some fried chicken and mashed potatoes and stay here.
We get shelter from the storm.
Absolutely. Hey, we'll be back here again next week at 5 p.m., 8 p.m. Eastern, Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. I'm Joey Gaynor.
I'm Paul McGee.
I'm Dan Madigan.
And together, we just tell you, don't click around, stick around.
But you can go for now. Come back next week.
But come back next week.
Thank you.
All righty.